Hello there, my name is John Caruso and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Everyone Has a Story. It's the podcast that complements both of our quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine Magazine and In Noosa Magazine. Our team are currently working on the summer issues. If you'd like your brand and business to be part of those publications, reach out to our client service managers and touch base on Facebook and or Instagram. On with today's episode. I've always admired my next guest's passion and drive. He applies it to all aspects of his life. In this episode of our podcast, we talk Harley-Davidson motorbikes, nature photography, growing up in Germany and making a new life here in Australia, and applying his entrepreneurial skills to building a successful business. Everyone has a story, and today I'd like you to meet Uwe Wulffen.
I grew up in very poor circumstances, so my dream was riding a motorbike. So I never made a car license. The first thing I had made a motorbike license. And only when I had my ex was pregnant with my first child, I realized, oh, I better do a car license now because I need my help. Otherwise, I always was a rider. So I have a big fat Harley Davidson, yeah.
Yeah?
My whole life. As you maybe know, I'm also a professional photographer.
Yeah.
So the best ride I ever done is actually not so long ago, maybe a few years back. I went with Vietnam veterans from here to Adelaide with 300 motorbikes.
Wow.
And we had for 21 days. And oh my God, that was the most best experience I had in my life. The people I met, these beautiful people, and then also of course the ride, the evenings, camping, it was just brilliant, absolutely brilliant, yeah.
I rode a motorbike as a kid. I certainly haven't ridden a bike in a very long time. But when I'm out in the open highway, and I've said to my wife Deb, I go, oh, imagine we get a bike, you and I, and we go to, not interested, no.
So when you do these trips to Adelaide, solo or somebody on the back?
Look, my partner's the same. She goes from here to Brisbane and says never again. Because it's
on the back of the bike?
Yeah.
Great.
Because it hurts her and it's not comfortable. It's windy and it's how it is, I guess.
Yeah.
So it stays in the garage and sometimes I get it out and go with Jesus here. He works here for Periwinkle.
Yeah.
We go he has a big Harley too. We go sometimes for a nice ride.
What kind of Harley is it? Tell me what size motor has it got? Engine?
It's, I think it's 2 liter. And it's a Fat Bob, 1899cc Fat Bob. Older, it's 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
But it only has 20,000 on the tap, so you can see how much I ride.
Yeah.
Never time.
Tell me about your photography. I do know that you're a great photographer, nature photographer.
Yeah.
When did your interest in that start?
As a child, I was over a visual because I never had it with reading and writing. I'm a visual guy, I guess, and it's actually developed more and more. So over my life, I'm really attracted to colors, to visual art. I love visual art. So the art track was just on here in Noosa. We went almost everywhere. It was not almost everywhere, but we saw a few great artists. I love it. You know, when I see it, I just get off. I really enjoy it. So photography is, my camera's actually always with me. And I do it, everything. I do also, I had a studio in Noosa, but COVID just, I gave it up then and it was better for time-wise as well. Business got very busy, my organic shop. But now I do a lot of work for a volunteer and paid for a U-turn, then standby, suicide prevention, all those organizations. And do their magazines and their annual reports and stuff like that. So, and that's mainly people. When you see my art on social media, I never show people. So I have them at home, but I do then nature photo because I walk a lot.
They're stunning. You know, for me, I'm look. I was told when I was a kid, I was colorblind that I can't see reds and greens. But you know, really bright colors stand out to me. So all my cars have been bright yellow, bright red, or blue. And the thing about your photography is, and I'm thinking of, you know, birds that you've captured, they're bright yellow, but the landscape is rich.
The
scenery, the colors in your photographs really strike me.
So there's work. And then there's every time, every minute we have for free. So my partner and I, we love nature. We love nature really much, I think. And we trek. We go trekking.
Yeah.
So every minute we have, except summer, so it's only every time except summer, we go out and trek on the weekends. And then if we have time for more than a day, we go. We just went to Kakadu.
Yeah.
Now, the last time, Kakadu, Litchfield, Maturenka, everywhere. It was beautiful. And there I catch the moments. And for me, it's two things. It's the moment is most important. I think the moment is amazing because, you know, you catch a moment. It's you have it and it's gone. It's gone. It's different.
Yeah.
And you have it.
Yeah.
You have it in your pocket. This is for me, it was always, even as a child, I said, oh, I can catch this moment. And capture no one can take it away from me. It's
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
I have a proof, you know, and I never changed. Actually, it's this is for me mostly important because after that, the moment is different already. And then, of course, the places you go, and of course, the birds. And oh my God, if I catch a bird, it's just awesome, you know. It's wildlife. It's
yeah.
It's pure. It's yeah. color. It's a moment. I love it. So that's yeah. That's what I love. And here, where we live, man, it's here.
Yeah.
It's all here.
Yeah.
Around us.
Your photos are stunning. I want to go back to your childhood and where you grew up. So tell me about, and we'll explore that a little bit more. You said that you had a poor childhood and you had big dreams. So whereabouts did you grow up?
I grew up in West Germany, on the east border, in near Helmstedt, Braunschweig, this area. And I'm one of five kids out of a socially very low family in these times. My parents drank both. I believe my father worked hard, but we were poor, and I was always out there, hardly home. School was for me a hobby. I did, and of course later on I felt it. I had to study later to get something. And yeah, that was my upbringing. But the thing is, I had a great upbringing.
Yeah,
my childhood was awesome. I probably was very lucky. I never got involved with drugs and crime and stuff like that. And in Germany, the system is really good. It's better than here. Not better, it's different. Because you actually get looked after from your youth to your... You either have to study, you have to do an apprenticeship. You can't just do it like here and have a break or something. So the government definitely looked after me and helped me to get an apprenticeship. And that was, for me, probably the start then in my career. I started working when I was 9. I done the newspaper thing, you know. Yeah. And then it went on. I never stopped working since then, I guess. And then I done my apprenticeship in retail, in a shopping center like Myers.
Yeah.
And then later, when I was older, I studied economics a bit.
What did you dream of as a kid? When you say you didn't like school,
the dream.
Oh, that's a lot of us. My son doesn't like school. I don't really like school, or didn't like school when I was. But I had big dreams. What were your dreams at school?
I had no dream. You know, the only dream I had to leave Germany.
To leave?
Yeah. And, you know, I believe in that. It's a thing, you know, would you believe when I say, you know that you can feel it when you were born somewhere where you didn't belong to? You know, I had the feeling I was born there, but I never belonged there.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that and why? Because my understanding is that I'm the son of parents who immigrated from Italy. Italy, though, was after the war, it was a poor nation. But Germany started to become a great, prosperous economic force. Were the times not prosperous in Germany?
In my time, I don't think it was for us. It started probably in the 80s.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I didn't fit in. I just didn't make it.
You just
it.
Wanted to leave the country.
And then I had the opportunity, I did, and then it changed my life. You know, I'm now almost 60. I came here when I was 32. My life was changed. My life was changed from
here
over
in Australia.
Yeah. Australia gave me what I was definitely seeking, and I love Australia.
Did you, growing up in Germany and having that desire to leave, did you know much about Australia?
Nothing.
No.
So
what made you choose?
I lived, we lived part-time in Greece. I just always done every trip to Greece. I loved the summer, the sun and the ocean and the lifestyle in Greece. And on one trip I met an Australian girl.
Oh, okay.
And she took me once.
I understand.
And then
I understand.
And then she took me. We are very good. We are like brother and sister today, actually. She's awesome. I actually just talked to her. And she's an amazing psychologist and business coach in Melbourne. She brought me to Australia, and I went back once or twice because...
You haven't been back?
No.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I love
Australia. I mean, I was born here, but I feel a real strong... And I've been to Italy 3 or 4 times. I feel a real strong connection to go back and see... although, do you know what's interesting? My dad, once he came out here in 1952 at the age of 19, he only ever went back once.
Yeah.
And he never spoke of it again.
Many Germans do that.
I wonder why that... What is
it's
that?
It's this... I think that's the war kit. Or
had no interest.
No, it was also... I think it's a strong urge to make a cut and start a new life.
Yeah.
Especially the generation before me. Yeah. I know, for example, a lot of Jewish people in Melbourne. They refuse to speak German, and they actually tell you off if you speak German to them. Even if they have the strongest accent like me, and you know they're Germans, but they wouldn't speak the language even again, ever.
Yeah, right.
So, and I said it's okay, that's extreme, but I think for many European people that came here in the 50s, it was the same story. They
new
just
start.
Done a new start, they done a cut.
Yeah, true. That's my,
and they didn't even taught their children the mother tongue.
Yeah,
which is good or bad. Take it like you want it, you know.
I want to talk a little bit about your business and the business path. We've spoken prior to this about with the story in the magazine. But you said when you came to Australia and this passion you have for food, you said the one thing that you couldn't get over was you hated the bread.
I hated the bread.
The bread, and you knew within you that you could do bread better.
The $1.50 bread. I can't do it better, of course. I'm not a baker. I cook, but I don't bake. But I found it, you know. And I found actually in Melbourne, I found European bakers, they actually started then up their organic way or good sourdough breads and cake from the metal thing, you know, the sourdough cakes we had in Germany. So that was the start, and then I felt much, much better. But the first time that I came here, I thought, oh my God, the coffee and the bread, that was absolutely terrible. It was cheaper, but it was terrible.
And so talk about, this started you on a journey of delving and studying the benefits of organic food, the journey of from, what do they call it, paddock to plate, making that, all that kind of...
Well, it was interesting because I had a milk bar in Germany, and I studied economics, and I done my apprenticeship in retail. But my passion was always food, and still in working in Germany, I thought always, oh, I wouldn't mind to have a little fruit shop. So before I even came here, they offered me already, because my partner knew my skills and my ethics in regards to work and food and stuff like that. So there was a big, the first or biggest home deliver company in Melbourne, the Green Line. So they took me on volunteer, and I set up their shops and the systems and so on and so on. And that was my entrance to the markets, to the biodynamic industry. Rudolf Steiner, that was the entrance. I worked for biodynamic marketing, and my kids went to the schools and to the Steiner schools and so on and so on. So that was my career, and it fitted, you know, the whole standards of Australia, the organic industry is clean and healthy compared to other countries. We are very good with that. So it's a religion for me today, and I pray it and I live it and we sell it.
Yeah.
That's our duty, you know.
Yeah.
And the good thing for me today is my reputation is good. We never failed. I think our passion is go through all the shelves and our service when customers come in, and that's the main thing.
Yeah,
the clean food.
I think the one thing that struck me when talking to you, and again, I kind of revisited my childhood, is you were talking about how in Germany and Europe and even in Italy, you eat seasonally.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, that was very, you know, you only ate what was in season. Now with genetic modification, you know, I find watermelons in the supermarket
20
all the time, and it's like, this can't be, where these mangoes come from, like, how is this happening?
If you eat seasonal, your body always will thank you for it. I never see a doctor. I have my health practitioners, and at my age I go to my blood test once a year, you know. But we never see a doctor because I believe so strongly that my diet is good enough to protect me and to, and of course exercise and stuff like that. But the main thing is seasonal diet, because the biggest problem we have in our today's time is that you eat every day the same stuff, and there we come to bread or sugary items and so on and so on. If you get watermelon every day of the year, of course you have problems with your health, because it's a sugary item. Still, it's a sugar item, or mangoes, or whatever. So to eat seasonal is important, very important. You can't get tomatoes at my place at the moment. Mm. Well, it's hard, but and it's also then amazing because you look for different ways. Yeah. You're forced to try something different, and that's the philosophy behind it, I guess.
What long-term goals do you have for the business? I think you mentioned when we spoke last, read the magazine article, you've been in operation for about 8 years. What would you like to see for the Bioshock brand, for your brand and the work that you do?
Now comes the big bang, man. You know Jess, I mentioned Jess. Jess Holdsworth.
Yeah. You gave her a lot of praise.
And she is
instrumental to the business and the brand.
Yeah, we both actually open on Friday a new entity.
Oh, did you?
And it's only one of more. And it's a totally different business name, because it's a partnership. So we decided to do it we learned out of our experience and try something totally new. So we open up in Stockland, Britannia.
Yes.
On Friday. And it is Greensmith Grocers.
Okay.
And it's very exciting. We probably need 10 to 14 days to properly build it, our colors and shelves and stuff. But then it's open, one of hopefully more in the future.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it will be awesome. So, and that's the future, because...
and the same philosophy behind...
Because, you know, everyone can say what we do. Everyone can do what we do. What they can't do is giving the experience of over 20 years in the organic industry and the health food industry. And I believe the main thing is giving the customer service and the integrity and all those things. I think that's today's time mostly important if you run a business. Because you can buy everything everywhere.
Yeah, I can't remember who originally heard that quote about retail, but you can open two identical businesses side by side, and the brand that offers the best or the better customer service will win out every time.
That's what we
believe. Irrespective of what's on the shelves.
Yeah. And so it's team building, training, find the right people, all those issues. It starts from scratch because, yes, you have your ambitions, but you need to have the people that give the same ambitions you have to the customer.
And did you say it opened last Friday or about
it to will open? Be it will be opening
about to
yeah
open.
This week. Okay. I would say the big grand opening will be in 2 weeks time.
Yeah. Okay. And what's Australians' attitudes towards buying organic? You know, where I know from Deb's work with Slow Food, we're at a disadvantage a little bit in Australia because of our geographical size. When you go to Europe, you know, it's faster from paddock to plate. Food seems more fresh. There's a shorter journey, distance, travel, storage, all that kind of stuff. And the Aussie mentality, the Australian mentality, seems to be locked into the big supermarket duopoly. They shove all their stuff into storage, and they send fruit and veggies from here to Victoria. Are Australians educated about this process? Do you think that they're
no,
not really?
No. I think it's COVID done a big bit, because before COVID, I think the industry had maybe, if we are lucky, the organic industry had a share of between 3% and 5%, no more. But, and there you go again, all of a sudden people have to tighten their belt and think about their diet, and COVID hit, and that was actually a big boost for the organic industry. Not only that, I think it changed a lot, and we will see if it continues. It changed a lot that people buy local. What means buy local for people? Because they're all busy. Go to little shops. Go to the specialists. We are specialists in our area. So it meant a lot to us, actually, the whole movement or the whole disaster.
Yeah.
Now see, they open the borders in a few weeks and see how we go with that.
Did that? I'm guessing the answer is no. But did that interfere with your business? Like, did you get how far away would you get supplies and stock?
No. But what we do is, okay, you're totally right. Oh, geographic. Queensland, you can't grow apples in Stanford. That's it. So we get those apples, of course.
Yeah.
Stone fruit. We have one farmer here, 120 kilometers in Boppel.
Yes.
It's my farmer. I work with him for 25 years. Peter Harper, my friend. Yep. He supplies almost uniquely us. We have stone fruit locally. The only shop in Queensland who has stone fruit certified organic grown here.
There's a process for him as your supplier to make sure that product is all organic.
It's all certified.
Yes.
It's all certified by NASA.
That's the word I'm looking for.
And then I go there and pick it up.
Yeah.
Every Sunday.
Yeah.
Fresh. And our customers know that. And there we go. You see, it's a fraction of the price and you buy then stone fruit from Victoria, South Australia, because you can't get it here. You can't get that stuff here. It doesn't grow here. It's not possible because of the climate. And there's exactly what you mentioned. Yes, they are miles behind it. Our best time for buying fresh, beautiful product here is winter. In winter, we have it all here. We have the salads, the greens, the coleslaw, the potatoes, everything here.
Yeah.
In summer is our tough time. But then because it's hot anyway, they love the mangoes and melons and stuff like that. So that's how Australia works. But most important is that I'm proud of it that everyone here, there's so many beautiful small growers in the area, they're not spraying their clean air. And they come and try to sell to me, but I say, yeah, I would love to take your stock, but it has to be certified organic because of our reputation and my integrity, because I can't prove it.
Yeah.
But I'm trusting the certification bodies.
Yeah,
that's proof enough for me and my customers, and that is what the customer expects from me. So you know what I do? I pay your certification.
Oh.
I do that. We do that. I think only one or two took it on, but the rest say, nah, I don't want to get certified because it is too expensive. It is not expensive.
What does that mean for the producer?
For the producer, it only means you need to fill out a big book, and that I think is the biggest hurdle for a farmer. And we help them with that if they want to get certified. Yeah. The process alone, it depends on the size of the farm, is under $1,000. And then
but there's no extra costs for them. There's no chemicals.
No. And also, they get premium prices when they are certified. Premium prices, I say. I mean, double the price almost.
Yeah.
And if you are a small grower, you don't even pay for any levies. You just pay your yearly certification, the audit, and that's it. And many farmers take it on. I mean, here alone, I think we help three or four farms and we sell their products exclusively, and it's awesome. For us, it is awesome. It is just, this is community building, trust, no miles. It's how it should be.
Yeah.
That's what we love.
It's a great philosophy.
Yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate your passion.
Thank you.
And I appreciate, and good luck with the new venture at the
Yeah, team. Thank you.
Awesome.
It will be awesome. Thank you so much.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that. Uwe Wulffen was my guest today. If you did enjoy the podcast, please feel free to share it about on your social media platforms and rate and review the podcast. We'd love that too if you're listening via Apple Podcasts or Wooshka or Stitcher. Remember, this podcast complements the two quarterly lifestyle magazines, InNoosa Magazine and Hello Sunshine Magazine. Our team are currently working on the summer issues for both of those publications, and they're still room for your business and your brand to be part of these two exciting publications. Reach out to our client service managers either on Facebook or on Instagram. Until next time, take care.